Hello and welcome to a very special edition of GFW Radio. This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Games for Windows Magazine, and I am here with Jeff Butler, the president of Sigil Games and executive producer of their very first game, Vanguard. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
Doing great.
Do we have
you?
To do a Jeff 1 and Jeff 2 so people know who we are when we're talking?
That is going to be confusing.
Okay. Or we could be Butler and Green.
That works.
All right, which is kind of more manly anyway. How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm going to be scared with every question I ask you, because if you could see in the studio here, if you're listening, Jeff is surrounded by PR handlers, like almost literally. There's like three of them behind him, except they're all, that look like they're either on their cell phones or their sidekicks. So maybe they're not paying attention.
There's no chance of me getting out of line in this situation.
So all those tough questions I'm going to ask you, they're going to like be doing the, you know, throat cutting thing when you're talking.
My back is turned to them, though, so I'll just ignore it.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
How are you doing, and how is the game going?
The game's doing fantastic. Everyone's been keeping busy, having a blast, putting the beta together. It's just at that most exciting point in time we're really able to sink our teeth into our work, because we're getting feedback from the players on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. It's probably the most fun time in beta. All the developers are able to jump in the game in their off hours and on play tests, give one another feedback, build upon their work. Mm-hmm. It's been fantastic in the last couple months.
How many people are playing right now, do you think, roughly, in the beta?
I logged off earlier today. There were about 940 people online.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's like a pretty big pool of different opinions to be getting, right?
Yep.
I mean, on any given day.
Yep. People have made it to level 40 so far. We're level locked in beta right now at 40.
That's insane.
Yeah. They've been hard at work.
Who would... Okay. I wouldn't do that personally. I just feel like... Because you're going to wipe these characters, aren't you?
We might transfer them over to a test server.
Ooh.
After launch.
Okay.
We've talked about it.
Hmm.
I think it would be a nice thing to do.
That would be nice. But it would just be test still, right?
Exactly.
So, huh.
Not a live realm.
Uh-huh. So are you getting feedback now that's like a lot different than what you were expecting? I mean, are things coming up that you couldn't possibly have imagined at the time you said, okay, let's let people play this game?
Not so far, actually, because we've been in the game with them kind of from day one. So we're judging our own work and then kind of basing our own, you know, some of our own personal opinions on some of the feedback that we've generated internally and whether or not it's been reflected in the player base. A lot of times we're the ones who find the exploits or find the problems with the games even before the players do.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So nothing is as striking as, oh, damn, you know, we really didn't think of that kind of thing.
We've been rebalancing and making some changes to the game, adding in this or that, tweaking the economy. We've been talking about things like bind upon equip and level limits fairly recently to manage the economy a little bit more tightly than we
level
had in
limits
the past.
Of items, say
level limits, things of that nature. So the game is evolving even throughout the beta test, but it's kind of a measured process. We're right there with the players, like I said, on a daily basis. So nothing really surprising so far.
I guess that's good, right?
Yeah.
You're not going like, oh, God, what have we done?
Yeah, we know we're going to have some emergent gameplay issues with some of our more advanced encounter system and things like that. And we have yet to see the effects of those things. But the beta will last a little while longer. We have that time.
How much longer?
Mm.
Of course, I don't know when this is broadcasting, so whatever you say might be meaningless.
We're planning a first quarter release next year.
Okay.
So a while longer.
Okay. That's not a long while.
Not too long, but long enough to figure out the high-end game, the rating, all of those important issues. I think if we hadn't done it before, we'd want even longer than that. But it's kind of, you know, we've got a lot of past experience to compare to. Even the people who are new to the team were very avid players in the genre before they worked in the industry. So they've got a lot of perspective.
Well, why don't we actually back up a little and tell people how long has this game now been in development? And maybe even just tell us a little bit about what the origin of this game was, how you and Brad decided to do this game.
We've been in development for a little bit over 4 years. By the time we launch, a little bit more than 4.5 years, in all likelihood. And the origin of the game actually started in the EverQuest days when we realized that EverQuest's sequel was not going to be able to have all of the fantasy game features that we could imagine for an MMO, not even in the short term. Technology, lead time, all of those things were going to keep us from being able to make EverQuest's sequel everything we would have liked it to be. We had some ideas for the diplomacy system, for instance, the non-conflict, combat resolution, opening lore and quests and things of that nature. A little bit more casual form of gameplay. Think of it like an open door, which we found in WoW, which of course launched after we started planning Vanguard, kind of lowering the barrier to entry, making more of an everyman's game, at least to begin with, so that there would be more critical mass. More people would come to the game. You'd have more chance to make friends, things of that nature. That was really the genesis of Vanguard, wanting to make the spiritual successor of EverQuest with a lot better technology and the ability to go anywhere that you could see in the world, things of that nature.
At the point, let's see if, I don't know if I have all my history straight here. At the point that, when were you and Brad out of Sony the first time around? Was it, had EverQuest 2 even started yet?
Oh, yes. EverQuest 2 had been in development for quite some time. I think, as a matter of fact, Brad was closely involved in the production of EverQuest 2. He may have been the executive producer or in that general slot when he left. He was VP, creative director, acting as executive producer of EQ2, as I recall, and had been in development for more than a year, if not more than two. And he left during the development of the third EQ expansion, Shadows of Luckland.
Right.
And I left right after Shadows of Luckland shipped.
Okay. And hey, that was like the last expansion I played all the way through. So there you go.
Some coincidence there, perhaps.
So even though your Sony handlers are behind you, I have to ask, since you're saying that you're thinking of Vanguard as a spiritual successor to EverQuest, does that mean to you that EverQuest 2 is not the spiritual successor to EverQuest 1?
It was not for me. I'm speaking specifically as a gamer. It was not the spiritual successor of EverQuest for me. But then I don't believe necessarily that they intended it to be so. Knowing that EQ was going to maintain its own subscriber base, I think it became their intent with EQ2 to ship more of an everyman's game. You know, something with a lower barrier to entry, but but a lot of depth, something that built up to the depth.
You know, it is pretty interesting that like that EA and Origin could never get it together on an Ultima Online 2. Despite, I don't know how many attempts. I mean, it was going to be our cover story at least once.
Yep, we had some developers who worked on that project early on in Vanguard days.
So, I mean, at least whatever you think about EverQuest 2, at least Sony was actually, you know, competent enough to get a 1 and a 2 out there running simultaneously, whereas UO could never figure it out.
Absolutely.
You know? But maybe that is, like, I still wonder about the cannibalism issue, you know?
It's a very real thing with MMOs. It's one of those issues that kind of are going to plague our genre because it takes so much time to play an MMO until we get to the point where they're so easy that you can manage two MMOs at once. They're pretty much always going to cannibalize one another.
Right. I mean, to me, that's the very biggest issue, and it's of course the one that everybody's dancing around, not with your game, but with every other game. It's like, I mean, obviously, WoW is the big elephant in the room, but at some point, whenever that is, it's not going to be. I mean, maybe it will be Vanguard. Who knows what it's going to be? But that's, to me, the big question. Right now, WoW is the big elephant in the room, and how do you convince people who are already paying a monthly fee, which is essentially like another cable bill or whatever, $15 a month, in addition to the hours they're devoting to the questing and all that, to now do another one on top of that? I mean, aren't you really having to ask them to quit WoW for Vanguard, realistically?
To some extent, quite possibly, yes. I think a lot of companies are going to be considering things like multiple entry points to a game where, for instance, let's say a sci-fi version of EverQuest where you can transfer your character back and forth between the two worlds, where you're, where a persona built in one game may be applicable in some way to one of those companies' other games, where your progress gets carried over for you. My guess is the future you're going to see stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because you just can't expect somebody to go back in and reinvest 3 years of time in characters over and over again.
Right. I mean, it's funny. You're seeing it even the you know, minor backlash amongst dweebs with the Burning Crusade beta right now, with people getting all pissed off that all this, all the hundreds of hours they've spent getting the, you know, the upper tier gear is now rendered
useless.
With the new stuff at the lowest level of blue and green, right?
Absolutely the case.
And I was thinking about it the other day in terms of how would Blizzard ever do WoW 2 at this point? They'd have the same problem as everybody else.
Or World of StarCraft.
Right.
You know, here's a different genre, and we know that it would likely appeal to other players than the current game, but then it would cannibalize as well. My guess is that, you know, the cable subscription service is on everyone's lips in relation to massively multiplayer games. The station players, the station pass is a huge thing where you know, you subscribe to one game for a certain price. You get all games at the same time. That's very helpful because you can maintain your Star Wars Galaxies characters or what have you and continue to participate in any Sony game. I think that is certainly the wave of the future for the modern MMO player. And then adding, at that point, it's just adding services, right?
Right. Yeah, I think I agree with you. That to me seems like the kind of hook that would, that might work. Somebody knows they're paying $15 a month, but they're getting this, 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 and this, as opposed to this one game.
Exactly. And in those games that require you to maintain your character or to go in, like in Galaxies, and maintain your guild house, put money in it so that it doesn't decay, I think that sort of service kind of, it's going to ring true. Certainly Vanguard will promote that sort of subscription model quite heavily.
Now, I know that you're a WoW player because it's come up quite a bit before. I know you have at least one level 60, if not more.
I have more level 60s than I have fingers.
Okay. That's kind of scary. So that's a lot of hours you put in. Not working on Vanguard. That's why it's so late, because of all the WoW playing.
You know, I actually think about it as working on Vanguard in one way, because knowing your competition is really success in the industry. It's such a new industry. Everything that one of our competitors does could literally change the direction of our entire industry at this stage.
Yeah.
So I got to be in there. Playing Jedi and Galaxies, you know, playing EQ2, all the games in beta, all the games in release that I can possibly get my hands on.
Well, I mean, it's an obvious smart thing to do for any developer. I mean, on our side of the fence, whenever we see, say, a real-time strategy game that is not, you know, designing with the conventional wisdom, like, you know, you could argue, well, they're not being original enough, but there's certain things that after a while are just the convention.
That's
so
true.
So if I can't, like, right-click on a unit, say,
interface,
then I'm thinking, what the hell are you thinking?
Yes, and that's certainly starting to be true in massively multiplayer games. Every major MMO kind of becomes a manual for the next one that comes out. And if you deviate significantly from that in terms of player control or interface, you're just going to confuse a lot of people out of the gate. So we hope to be pretty familiar to people who are playing the modern games today.
And yet you have to give them more than just a feeling like, well, I've done this already.
Oh, absolutely. From the very beginning. You know, one of the things that was a Vanguard tenet back in the day when we first started talking about making another fantasy MMO, people said to us, well, you really can't give us that first kiss experience. We've already had our first kiss, PvP in UO, or raiding with our guild in EverQuest, and I don't think it's ever going to feel the same. You're never going to give us that back. We sat down and made a long list of things that we thought could help our game recover that feeling. One of those things was, you know, amazing vistas. We took Keith Parkinson's art direction and tried to make a video game that was representative of his most detailed oil paintings, where you could see amazing sights off in the distance that kind of pulled you into the game world and made you want to explore and level up. And I think we were pretty successful in that, when I run around in the game now, when I put my player's hat on and I drop all the developer stuff and look at the game from a player's perspective, it does draw me in that way, and it mm-hmm. does feel new. You know, I even tried not to immerse myself in the lore of some of the dungeons and stuff like that so I can find it out through the game as a player, and mm-hmm. I think it'll resonate with people.
Mm-hmm.
We did recapture that to at least some extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, the reason I asked you about WoW in the first place was, you know, hearing you talk about this stuff and recapturing the first kiss in a way, like, you were a great minigamer's first kiss, as it were, with this genre, right? I mean, you and
Most definitely.
I mean, there obviously was Ultima Online before EverQuest, and there was Meridian 59. There were others, but EverQuest was really the first really big one, the first one that convinced a lot of people to do it.
Yeah, the first mainstream, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
We put it in the Hall of Fame a little while ago. But now, you know, with WoW sort of dominating the scene, like, do you like resent their success at all? Does it bug you at all?
Not at all. You know? Actually, you know, not only as a gamer but a developer, I love what they've been able to do. I remember the days when we first started talking about doing Vanguard that people said, well, you know, the market's tapped out.
Mm-hmm.
You've reached for every man's wallet, mm-hmm. and you've gotten the wallets that are there that mm-hmm. are going to hand you money. That's all the subscribers that there ever will be.
Mm-hmm.
And we just looked at one another and we're like, you know, wow, I know people who would love MMOs, my personal friends, who have just not been able to break the barrier of entry.
Yeah.
They're not PC people or whatever the case may be. We knew that there were a lot more people out there. And, of course, WoW has proven that. And I think there are a lot more people than WoW has exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Wait until you see the first massively multiplayer sports games.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's going to look at how popular fantasy football is. Look at how popular EA Sports games are on Xbox, you know, 360 Live, so on and so forth. Put all that stuff together in a massively multiplayer fantasy football where mm-hmm. you're running through the seasons, where the actual players are represented and can be traded, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Where you can jump into the individual player as an MMO, as a sports MMO player, and manipulate that individual player with his strengths and skills and weaknesses. People will eat it up. And it's just mm-hmm. a matter of time before it shows up.
Especially if there were guns in the
game.
Oh,
yes.
Right. If I could, like, round the bases firing, you know, yep. that'd be awesome.
It'll be coming down the pike. Massively multiplayer racing, uh-huh. et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
pick,
racing.
Pick any game.
Yeah. Yeah, like Motor City Online was way ahead of its time.
Yep. Too far.
Auto Assault, I don't understand exactly what happened there. I mean, I shouldn't, like, talk about it like it's dead because it's still live, so I'm sorry, NCSoft.
I would have played it if it was a little more Mad Max.
Yeah, it was probably a little too EQ, huh?
Yeah.
EQ in cars.
Yeah, a little too generic for me.
Yeah, I think we were all hoping more for, you know, exactly, like a Mad Max-y sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something I could, you know, something based in some known IP or something mm-hmm. of that nature.
So do you believe, I mean, it's funny because somebody just asked me this question too, like, well, now that WoW has this many million people, like, is that it now? And really, I answered what you did, because back then people said that about the few hundred thousand playing EverQuest, right?
Absolutely.
So do you actually think that it's going to happen again, that at some point we'll say, wow, how quaint it was that we thought that the MMO audience was tapped out at 4 million with WoW?
Absolutely. I'm sure it'll happen again. I mean, there's developing countries that are going to be avid MMO players, and there's a whole lot of people that these games have yet to reach.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so there's two things you're going to have to try to do here, which is convince those playing WoW to try your game, right?
Absolutely.
And develop the new audience, mm-hmm. right? I mean, because it seems to me like you won't succeed if you don't. You got to get some of those WoW people, right? Because they'll be the early adopters into your game.
Absolutely. So, you know, all the people who played EverQuest, EverQuest 2, some of the other earlier core games, it's one of those things where we have to, as best we can within mm-hmm. our genre, appeal to just about everyone, and then start a pretty solid marketing campaign to get the word out to new people.
Mm-hmm. And you feel confident about your ability to do that?
Well, the toughest part's going to be reaching the new people, because it's arguable as to where they're hiding and how to reach them.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you can follow some fairly interesting marketing concepts. You know, for instance, third edition D&D had an unusual marketing concept where they went primarily after the folks they called the mavens. A good example is the guy who you know in the office who's into stereos. He knows everything about stereo equipment. Anytime somebody wants to buy a new stereo, you have no choice but to go to that guy because he knows what the hottest product is on the market. He knows what you need to buy, what speakers you need, so on and so forth. You appeal to those mavens, and you let them talk about your game. So you find those guys wherever they're hiding for whatever genre, whether it's Magic the Gathering. A lot of people who play Magic play MMOs. You got to know where to ferret them out, how to
reach
them.
These guys must be on your forums already, I would think.
A lot of them are. But, you know, going to their forums, you know, find a you know, Magic the Gathering online forum, go to their forums and talk to them about the game that they're missing. They like playing online games. There's a card game inside Vanguard Saga of Heroes that actually matters to you as an adventurer, a crafter, a harvester, socialize, you know, a socializing player, so on and so forth. That's going to be the tough part about ferreting out the new person. What magazines do they subscribe to? What are they doing today other than playing WoW or another one of the, or EVE, you know, whatever massively multiplayer game out there that would appeal to them? How do you find them and reach them and draw their attention to your product?
Right. Actually, yeah, you mentioned EVE, and that's true. That's a good example of a game that is somehow, you know, it's doing its thing. It's doing well on its own.
It's viral.
Yeah.
I mean, they started they started a game. They had a fantastic premise. All players in one world, strong PvP, you know, all or nothing. Your ship is gone. It's gone forever. It takes a long time to build it. So people who have hardcore gameplay styles find a lot of a lot of value for their time invested in a game like that. And from that point on, it's viral marketing. The guy who you knew, who you PvP'd with in UO, who always knew the best exploits, he always knew how to kill the other guy, that guy may be playing EVE right now. You still got him on your you know, your trillion message list, and you ask him what he's doing, or he just posts, you know, his EVE icon saying what he's doing in EVE. And then you know there's got to be a game that a gamer who's like-minded is enjoying today.
Right.
So you go and buy a copy.
Right. So the reputation of Vanguard so far, or a lot of it, has been about its hardcoreness.
Yes.
And when I was at the event that you guys held a few weeks ago, you seemed to be going to some extra pains to sort of demystify that.
Absolutely the case. You know, back in the infancy of Vanguard, before we were even talking about Vanguard Saga of Heroes, we were just talking about a spiritual successor to EverQuest. Keeping a subscription model game flowing and making sure that customers feel welcome, welcome to join the game, welcome to rejoin the game after they've gone for a tour of duty overseas, or their job has taken them away to, you know, an offshore oil drilling rig for 3 months, whatever the case may be. In some of the more modern MMOs, that those types of events are a closed door. You've lost contact with your guild. You've lost knowledge of the progression curve. An expansion has come out. Now you feel kind of lost. You don't know anything about the Outland, and you don't have a flying mount, for instance. So it makes it very difficult to think about coming back to the game and rejoining. There's obviously a huge learning curve. Designing a game that welcomes a player who has 20 minutes to play, who hasn't played in 1 day or hasn't played in 20 days or 200 days, is something that's pretty key. Every time you launch an expansion or you do live content, it's got to reinvest the players that you have and the players that you would like to return to your subscription game. So Vanguard was literally envisioned from that standpoint. And while I would call it a more challenging game than WoW, it's also intended to be more rewarding for that challenge. It's kind of, those two things go hand in hand. Think of, you know, a really good dungeon master. If you ever played Dungeons and Dragons in college or something of that nature, you know, when you're investing an evening's time expecting some entertainment, you like to be challenged, not necessarily frustrated beyond a certain point. Certainly not necessarily as frustrated as games like UO might have left you after you got PK'd and lost all your stuff, or EQ might have left you after you spent 15 hours trying to camp a rare spawn only to have some level 50 wizard show up and gank it and then log back off.
How about leveling down? That was always my favorite.
Oh, yes.
leaving my gaming session at the end of the night lower level than I started.
Yeah, that's that sort of thing is, you know, it's very unlikely to expect the modern gamer to put up with those things. Keeping that barrier to entry and re-entry low and making the game feel like a welcome place was huge on our list from day one. You can solo to 50 in Vanguard. You're very much encouraged to group, but even more than just encouraging you to group, we're encouraging you to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the group that keeps you coming back after 6 months.
Right.
It's your friends.
Right.
We've heard it time and time again.
Right.
And we feel the same way ourselves.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be logging on and playing WoW right now if my guild didn't need me as a tank. Or need me to fill in with any one of my other alt characters where necessary. You know, any good guild needs competent players. They need the social glue of people who are friendly and who enjoy these games, who keep people coming back on and playing month after month, year after year.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do without it.
Mm-hmm. At the demo, I was really impressed by the low level mounts. I thought that was a really clever idea.
Oh, yes. We made a big world back in the very early days of Vanguard when we were running around our test maps trying to decide if we were making them large enough, if they felt real. You know, mm-hmm. The castle in the distance, is it far enough away?
Mm-hmm.
Does it give you that sense of wonderment? We realized pretty early on that mounts were going to have to be a player entitlement starting at earlier levels.
Right. And it seems like it's not like just sort of like trying to one-up WoW, like, well, we have them at level 10 instead of 40, because you actually sort of did this nice, you know, it's kind of like a crappy horse, you know. It's like enough to get you by, but it's a nag.
It's a nag.
But you still got to earn the better mounts.
Oh, right, yes.
Over time.
Yeah, that becomes part of your progression, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Leveling up your character, leveling up, getting better mounts, faster mounts, crafting better horseshoes and armor and all that sort of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, you still can't fight, though, on the horses, right?
You won't be able to fight on horseback at launch, but after launch, mounted combat's definitely on the list.
Mm-hmm. That's either going to be great or it's going to suck. That's my professional opinion.
Well, we envisioned mounted combat really early on in development. So a lot of the systems that we built, for instance, the player skills, the actual player classes and their jobs kind of dovetail very neatly into mounted combat. Expect kind of a rock versus paper versus scissors sort of approach, where the mounted player is poor at spell casting and poor at archery, for instance,
right,
but able to deliver a devastating charge. The infantry player who has things like a pole arm or spear has great defense against charging mounted characters. On a mount, you can easily outflank another player and deal massive damage. But then again, you're easy to shoot at as well because your movement is very predictable. So you're vulnerable to arrows. You're vulnerable to spells. If you get knocked off, you can be seriously hurt, stunned, all sorts of interesting things like that. You'll see large PvP melees, I expect, with certain people mounted for one reason or another and certain people dismounted.
Right.
Certain people using missile weapons.
Will people be able to fire arrows, you think, from their horses, like horse archers? Or
most definitely, although it'll be less effective to utilize archery from the back of a mount than it will be from the ground. Shorter range, less accuracy. Very rock, paper, scissors.
You're not going to be able to kill the animals, are you?
No. I'm pretty sure your mount won't actually participate in combat with you as a pet.
Okay, that'd be kind of sad.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to do that. Although the mount may likely have stamina and things like that.
So right.
Executing your special abilities and sprinting, using some of like the flanking attacks will probably draw mount stamina. And of course, all that breaks into flying mounted combat later on, where stamina and the ability to stay aloft matter.
Yeah, see, that when I picture whether I'm going to play or not, or what I want to do in the game, that's the thing. I picture like being in a flying mount, you know, raining terror down on
absolutely,
you know, lobies,
death from above.
Happy, yeah.
And flying mounted combat would work the same way, pretty much rock, paper, scissors, where you're fantastic diving from above. Mm-hmm. But when you're flapping along in a straight line, anyone can hit you with an arrow because they know where you're going to be.
And that seems like it'd be equally fun.
Yes.
Just be sniping Morons flying above you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Would they actually fall off their mount? Have you thought about that?
Like, oh, yes. We absolutely have thought about that. As a matter of fact, I died twice in demos earlier this morning falling off my mount.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. See, right there, I'm probably going to play.
Oh, yeah.
Just to do that.
The ability to, like, shoot somebody off their mount with a spell as they fly by.
Yeah. Right.
Very cool.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay.
Yeah. We've been talking a lot about player-crafted ships, and of course, the first question there is how about ship-to-ship combat? Again,
we won't
have ship-to-ship combat at launch, but looking post-launch, the ability to mount a cannon on your ship and go cruising past the newbie yard and blow up a few newbies on the PvP server.
I think you mentioned that on the demo day that, like, if your ship was destroyed in a fight, it's obviously not gone forever, right? But it will require a repair or something?
Something of that nature. Kind of like the corpse of your player. Maybe you can, you know, pay some gold or devote some crafting skill or resources to putting it back together, and it would appear in the world like a corpse. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Flotsam. You go click on your Flotsam
right.
and rebuild it.
Right. Okay, so speaking of corpses, and then I don't know how much time we actually have. How are we doing? 30 minutes? Okay. So let's talk about death in Vanguard, because there's been some, you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time trolling the message boards or your message boards because I have to troll my own. But I do know that some people have been bitching about your guys' death mechanism, or maybe not understanding it, or maybe understanding it and not liking it.
Yes.
So what is your take on death in Vanguard?
Well, in all honesty, death is one of those elements of frustration that exists in these games for one reason or another. In general, to make you appreciate the fact that you've achieved something, some sort of goal. You've avoided death and whatever sting the particular massively multiplayer game attaches to it. It's almost inarguable that the death mechanic is factored into subscription numbers. So when you're looking at a death mechanic, depending on how much of a penalty there is, you're effectively, if you decide to be very hardcore, limiting your potential number of subscribers. Mm-hmm. We want to make a challenging game, one that appeals to the achiever, that remains an open door to the average person. So picking the appropriate death mechanic to reward players who manage to achieve is it's one of our primary goals. I think that we're going to end up with a death mechanic that is kind of dynamic based on mob difficulty. So the harder the mob gets, the more money or the more experience you may lose when you die and want to recover your corpse. Whether or not we have a corpse recovery mechanic at launch remains under debate. Right now, the way the system is set up, you only have to recover your corpse if you're killed by the most powerful mobs in the game, like literally the most powerful mobs in the game. So in the dynamic threat system, we have, you know, different dots that denote mob difficulty, and a 6-dot mob is the most powerful. And when one of those kills you, you have to run back and get your corpse. But that may end up being part of an alternate rule set. We're not absolutely sure right now.
Okay, so what happens right now if I'm level 6 and I get killed by a goat?
If you get killed by the goat, you can run over to the altar where you respawn and just pull your corpse back to you for about 8 copper.
Okay.
Which is really cheap.
So it's a cheap money hit.
Yeah, it's a little money hit right now. And if you go to recover your corpse, if you basically make the run back to where you died, you get a little bit of the experience you lost back.
Okay.
So in general,
Not all of it, though.
Not all of it. But it's not more than just a couple of level appropriate kills. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a sting. I can tell you, doing some stupid stuff fairly recently down by the riverbank, trying to kill some crocodiles that were way over my level. I died like 4 times and didn't end up progressing for about my hour's worth of time invested. And that's the last time that I'm going to do that.
But you can't level down, right?
Nope. Can't lose a level.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. you don't lose your skills. You don't lose your level. And in general, you don't really suffer from loss at all in the game. So you don't lose your items. They don't decay or anything like that, because it's just one of those things. Nowadays, you invest time in a massively multiplayer game and you want to walk away with what you earned for your time invested.
So if I have just recently leveled up and I get killed five times in a row, does it? I just stop. There's a point at which I just don't lose any more XP?
That's correct.
So I've just hit the rock bottom of level
10. Yeah, I think in some cases you might then start accruing debt. So you can basically get into a hole, but you can dig yourself out and you don't lose your place in line.
So probably don't play stupid is the advice that...
Yeah, we definitely aren't going to reward somebody who plays stupid or just takes their gear off, for instance, and goes running across the world trying to see how many corpses they can create so they can create lag for other players or something of that nature.
Who would ever do anything like that?
Yeah. Oh, it's actually, I don't think it's ever happened in any game.
Hey, can there be trains in Vanguard?
There certainly can be trains, but
awesome.
they're a little bit friendlier than other trains.
Uh-huh.
In a manner similar to WoW, those trains don't automatically aggro on everyone they pass by.
Yeah.
Unless there's a bug. There have been a few bugs in beta. I saw a guy run by me a couple days ago with a pride of lions on his heels, and I was like, wow, that guy's going to die, and sure enough, he did. Unfortunately, he ran by me a little too closely,
Oops. And
then the pride of lions was on my heels.
Yeah.
And I had to run. I think I ran about 2 kilometers before they leashed back to where they belonged.
I thought that was definitely one of the better WoW innovations. Innovation, it's more like a refinement.
Yes.
Right?
Preventing the grief ability of training. If the mob leashes back, it evades the whole way back. It doesn't gain aggro on anyone else. You can't catch it in an AoE and aggro it or anything like that, and will end up doing something that is for Vanguard purposes functionally identical to that.
And God, remember the shame that you would have yourself if you caused a train like an EverQuest?
Absolutely.
I would log off because I would just feel so
absolutely
bad and humiliated. Here's that ass who trained, you know.
Yep.
I'd have to like go away.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
And it could be pretty bad. You could just wipe out an entire zone full of people if you weren't careful.
Yeah. If I got too much shit, I would just like train him again.
Like, exactly.
Okay, fine. I'm a jerk. Take
and
this
then
now.
Customer service would get the petitions.
Yeah.
All of those things, it's just one of those issues where that whole scenario, the customer service getting the petition, designing a system where your CS people don't ever have to get involved allows you to take the money that they would have had to be paid and put it back into developing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So building a game that's generally free of the need for customer service is the smartest thing to do.
Yeah. To me, that seems like a huge advantage that you and Brad have is you're obviously coming into this very much with your eyes open.
Definitely.
Right? I mean, it's the mistake you see with other MMO developers, I think, is that they don't realize that what they're making is actually like a service and
very
not
true.
A product.
That's true. It's a service like any other thing, you know, running an airline, what have you, operating a cable TV station. You have to understand that your product has to be updated. It has to be maintained. You have a live team. You have expansions. You have customer service. And everything that you do, all the game design elements have to be set up like an amusement park where the game is meant to flow. People come in. People go out. They experience the content. And at times, they may leave the game. You got to welcome them back. You got to give them reason to come back, so on and so forth.
It was really amazing to me that I spent the weekend playing EverQuest 1, your old game.
Blast
and it was amazing
past.
To me how much it's actually changed now in response. Obviously, the graphics haven't really, but in response to not just WoW, but I guess everything that's come after.
Very true.
But it did remind me how how really kind of unfriendly it was. I don't think deliberately you weren't saying, like, let's make an unfriendly, mean game.
Not at all.
It was just more like the convention at the time.
That's true. I mean, back in the day, we remember conversations between developers where, you know, some element of frustration either in UO or EverQuest would be brought up either by a player or another developer. You know, I didn't care for X, Y, or Z. And sometimes the response would be, well, you know, then design a better system because we're looking at the game and we haven't come up with something to fix this particular element of frustration. And so the way the game plays right now is the only way we could figure out to make it.
Right.
Or the way we had time to code it or whatever else the case may be. Being able to identify what, you know, what elements of design were the underpinnings of EverQuest's success, and which ones hampered EverQuest's success, that was our early goals in concepting Vanguard, when we still had everything on a piece of paper, and it was 12 guys in an office talking about and envisioning the game that we were going to build, distilling EverQuest, UO, and the other products that were on the market for what made them a success and what hampered their success, what reduced their subscriber base, was one of our key goals.
So what do you think like are at least a couple of the things that were successes to you in EQ1 that still carry over now to Vanguard all these years later?
One of the things that that we've actually struggled with in terms of design was the entertainment value of fear or suspense. The fact that in EverQuest, you could ostensibly die and lose your corpse because your corpse would decay after a certain period of time. As you were exploring an area that you weren't familiar with, there was real danger. You could lose hundreds of hours of your personal achievement. And because of that, it instilled a sense of fear. You know, what's around the corner of that next dungeon corridor? I don't know, and I'm not going to find out. Let's wait till somebody else goes down there and gives us a report. Well, there could be a trap door there. We could fall through to a lower level of the dungeon and never make it back out, and our corpses would rot because we're the highest level players in the game right now. That happened. That situation, that exact situation, happened to us quite a few times running up through EverQuest in the early beta. And that's one element that is very difficult to capture because it's tied so strongly to frustration. You know, you can't really take hundreds of hours of players' progress away. So in modern MMOs, I find that element of entertaining sorely lacking. You know, there is no fear. I have no fear when I'm leveling up in WoW or I'm raiding. I'm not really going to lose anything. And I miss that. So trying to engineer that into Vanguard has been quite a challenge, for sure.
When I was playing EverQuest 1, I've seen all these things that they've added now to make it easier and friendlier. It was amazing to me to think back that this game used to not have things like a map. Like, you had to know where you were going. Or you had to, like, map it out, like, you know, in the old days with, like, graph paper or something. Let's see, what else didn't it have? There were quests, but there wasn't any kind of quest log or whatever.
You had to keep a notebook. You had to write down the NPC name who gave you the quest, write down where he was at, and just go from there. And many times I didn't know where to turn the quest in, you know, wasn't paying attention, whatever the case may be. There were quite a few elements of gameplay that that are in modern games that were lacking in EQ.
People are just so lazy now. You know, like when I'm playing WoW, back in my day, we didn't have maps. I don't mean it that way. I just mean that, you know, like when you log on to WoW and they give you everything. I mean, you've got a map. They put yellow dots on the map. You've got the quest log. You've got how many of this thing you need. And then you still get people going, where's Dingleberry? You know, and it says like right there in the quest, you know, Dingleberry standing in the tavern of whatever.
Well, I had to laugh. Just this morning, in fact, somebody was talking to me about some Star Wars Galaxies functionality that doesn't exist in the basic WoW client, the ability to mark a waypoint.
Oh, right.
You know, here I mark a waypoint in the middle of Elwynn Forest where Princess, the boar, spawns. And, you know, that's relevant because that's where all of my alts go through, and I want to email that waypoint to you because you've just started to play on my server and you've never played Alliance before. That's something that we could do in Star Wars Galaxies that we can't in WoW. And as these games evolve, if you were to sit down today and take Vanguard, WoW, all of the WoW interface expansions that have come out, and combine them all and derive from that a subset of needed elements for what the fourth generation game is going to have to provide the players on day one, you need a 150-man development team. You need a full 5 years and an ungodly budget to put it all together, because that's what players are going to ask for. You know, and if you don't give it to them, they'll find a way to make it themselves. Look at all the WoW mods. You know, they're going to modify the game to play in the manner that they choose or that they find most appealing. And then the mods themselves are going to evolve over the years to be specifically what the players are looking for.
Mm-hmm. So going into Vanguard then, do you guys feel like, are you mod open and, you know, are you welcoming them?
Most definitely.
Do your,
And in fact, some of the mods that exist for the modern games out there right now are reflected in some core functionality in Vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way, if you've ever played WoW and experienced decursive, you know, anytime somebody in your party gets a curse placed on them or some other affliction that your character class has the ability to cure, you get a little pop-up, you know, a little pop-up. It tells you what the affliction is, and you just click on the icon right next to it, and your character targets them and removes, scrubs the debuff or whatever it is automatically. Mm-hmm. That works very similar to the reaction system in Vanguard, where if you've got someone as your defensive target and they're taking damage, your tank, you can rescue them and intercept the damage that they're taking, and you get an icon that pops up on your screen. You've got a hotkey that automatically executes that, or you can click it with your mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a mod. So thinking about not only the games that are out there, but what players are trying to get out of them that maybe they don't even offer.
Right.
Waypoints in WoW that they had in Star Wars Galaxies, decursive, things of that nature, things like damage meters, threat meters, you name it. That's that's what everyone wants.
I think even EverQuest 1 now has, not waypoints, but, you know, you can get that little trail leading to the next thing.
The little silver thread.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was amazing to me to see.
I think Neocron was the first game that had that actual thread to lead you someplace, and Star Wars Galaxies picked up on it because their cities were complex, and you know, if there was a quest NPC or a trainer, if you didn't know where it was, there was no way to find it. So they instituted the little system of lines and arrows that you could follow along on the ground.
Yeah, it was smart.
Yep. It works, and that's another added element of complexity in these games. Many people come into a 3D world space, they're unfamiliar with it, and if you don't find a way to let them know about your world and where they are, where to get around, then you've got 1 day, 1 hour, 30 days before they quit.
It seemed back in the EQ1 days that you were almost deliberately secretive about the geography. Like, I remember, you know, being a magazine editor back then, and we were like trying to get maps out of you guys. That, like, we thought it would be cool if we could print, you know, this area, and there was this real sort of hesitancy. Like, we want the players to figure this out on their own.
I remember it well. That was back in the day when the thinking was that all elements of the game, other than the very first entry-level experience, was a reward for player achievement. Look, you want to know your way around Nektilos Forest. You've got to level up, or you've got to get somebody in your guild who knows. That's the reward that the game offers. I think as these products have evolved, we've come to learn that it's the actual gameplay, the knowledge of the intricacies of the encounters and the dungeons, and, you know, don't turn left and kill that mini boss first. You got to go to the right and get the two mini bosses that spawn before you kill him for the following reason. That's where player knowledge seems to reside. People are a little bit more happy with that.
In a way, too, it might have been the internet that helped sort of maybe in a way force developers to have to sort of give up that kind of notion, because like
EQ
Alakazam and EQ Atlas, that was right. That's the one.
You know, it's one of those things where if you don't create EQ Atlas, someone else is going to come and do it for you.
Yeah.
And then even those things that you did hold aside as player knowledge and reward are given to every player at low level.
Right.
ThoughtBot's a good example of that as well. What's my gear progression for a Tauren Hunter from 30 to 40? Well, ThoughtBot will probably tell me that if that's what I want to know. I can experience it in the game, or I can just go find out very quickly.
Again, I guess I just have mixed feelings about it all, because it feels like you're kind of right in a way that there, it seems like something gets a little lost in all of this being so easily available to everybody. I mean, on the other hand, you don't want to be like an elitist, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it would be tough from a developer standpoint to prevent people from honestly obtaining that information and displaying it. You know, it's one of those things. A lot of times I look at the Japanese RPGs, and if you take if you take the console Japanese RPG as a cross-section and you look at what the players seem to seek and what they're willing to invest their money in, and I'm not just talking about the money that they spent on the original game, mm-hmm. but they'll go in years afterwards and they'll buy every manual and every reference work that, that shows a picture of every weapon in the game in the hands of every single character, race and class, every suit of armor in the game worn by every single race and class, the stats detailed out for every single monster and its appearances throughout every level range. People really like those collections of information, mm-hmm. and they pay good money for those things. The websites that compile that stuff get massive amounts of traffic. Mm-hmm. They get bought up and they become very popular. I think what we'll end up doing, at least for the near future, is allowing the people outside of Sigil to pursue that. We'll remain as closed-mouthed about those facts as possible, uh-huh. and we'll let people gather those details, and that way the players in the game can choose to pursue that information, or they can play the game fresh.
Right, and the great thing is, like, that information will be out there, and it will have cost you zero time and effort on your own.
Yeah,
right?
And at some point in time,
people doing your work for you.
Yeah, at some point in time, maybe we'll offer a compilation, in the manner of some of the Final Fantasy single-player RPGs.
But Blizzard doesn't get anything out of ThoughtBot, right? I mean, that's
absolutely not
a gigantic encyclopedia that they had nothing to do with. So why should you bother?
Yep, nothing to do with at all. And, a lot of the content is kind of spoiled there.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I was playing WoW just earlier today, and just with a Lobi character it was in Wetlands, so it's something I've already been through 10 times. But I had to turn in this quest that was somewhere in the middle of the zone. I could not remember for the life of me where the guy was.
Yep.
And I just sat there like, okay, I could alt-tab and go to ThoughtBot, or I can actually, play the game and find him myself. And I said, okay, I'm going to give myself two more minutes to find him, and then I'm going to ThoughtBot.
Yep.
And then I waited about 30 more seconds, and then I just went to ThoughtBot. And there he was, and there was a little map where he was. And it's like, well, now what am I doing?
The last time I ran through, I was trying to time myself and get to 60 as fast as humanly possible. And so I relied upon, the WoW wiki and the thought bots to tell me exactly where everything was, because I really wasn't looking to experience the content. I was just on a timed run to 60. But that's one element of replayability.
That seems kind of different.
Yes.
But what if it was your very first character and you were doing that?
My first run through WoW, ThoughtBot existed, and I have to say, I generally relied upon my guild to let me know what to do and where to go. I didn't really refer to ThoughtBot. If we were going to run to Sunken Temple, I just said, okay, guys, I got 4 quests for Sunken Temple right now. Is that all the ones I need? No. Go to Stormwind. There's a dwarf in a tavern in the old town or in the dwarven section. You need to go talk to that guy because he's got one more quest for you. Okay, so 5 quests is all I need? Yeah. And this is from guild members who had gone through it 10 times.
So does it not bother you? I mean, you're inherently, obviously deeply involved in your game world, creating this whole experience. And is it going to bother you that you're taking all this time to craft it, and there's going to be players who aren't going to give a damn about any of the lore or the stories you're trying to tell? The quest logs, they're just going to want the stuff.
It doesn't bother me at all, because the truth of the matter is there's, especially nowadays, these products have to be many things to different people. Take character customization, for example. You could spend 4 hours customizing a character in Vanguard, or you could spend 4 minutes or 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's all up to you. If you really want a unique looking character that doesn't look like anyone else, you can go and create that for yourself. But if that's not something that's important to you, you don't bother with it. Mm-hmm. It's all about choices nowadays with these games. Do you want a quest? Do you want to grind? Do you want to harvest and craft, or do you want to adventure? Mm-hmm. So many people represent different gameplay styles, but are still great subscribers, social glue, from the housewife who's got 2 hours in the evening to play to the Uber guild master who commands 200 people at a whim and who covers all bases in every game that he plays. Mm-hmm. You got to give those people all the choices that they need because after all, we're asking people to take all the time that they've invested in other massively multiplayer games and walk away from it and come to ours.
Yeah.
We've got to give them what they're looking for mm-hmm. and make it worth their while to spend a year or a year and a half or more of their time in our game, kind of mm-hmm. build them a world where they can feel they can make a difference, something that will grow with them, mm-hmm. provide them some challenge, let them build their guild ship and their mm-hmm. guild mansion, so on and so forth, eventually player-crafted cities, things mm-hmm. of that nature.
I really have a lot of respect for what you guys are doing because it seems like it's such a huge gamble. You know, you don't need me to tell you this. This is not like making a quote unquote regular game.
Absolutely.
Right? The investment is, you know, kind of mind boggling. You can't even like get your head around it.
It certainly is. And at this point, it's the game that we want to play. From the day we first started talking about it, we envisioned Vanguard as kind of the evolution of the games that we were playing, what we wanted to see come down the pike in the future. There will be games, we'll work on games after Vanguard that'll be even more complex than this one. Far more daunting undertakings than this particular one. Mm-hmm. We're just building the genre right now, mm-hmm. trying to find even new styles of gameplay like diplomacy that can fit within a massively multiplayer game, make the fantasy world or the science fiction world feel mm-hmm. more real to the player, mm-hmm. cover more bases. You know, at some point in time in the future, you might be able to crack open a fantasy novel and read through it 4 or 5 chapters and say, you know, there's some representation of gameplay in my MMO of the year that covers every single thing that existed in this fantasy novel from a couple of different directions. I could do all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. People come up with it. If you mm-hmm. look at the full cross section of PC and console games from Guitar Hero all the way up to like Europa 1400, mm-hmm. PC game, people have already envisioned and made reality games that have very disparate styles and types of play, mm-hmm. different goals, different methods of execution mm-hmm. and success within the gameplay. Mm-hmm. Bundling all those in an MMO mm-hmm. is going to happen.
Right. The Wii controller would be another one.
There you go.
Yeah.
All sorts of neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen.
Mm-hmm. The future is going to be cool.
It's definitely going to be cool.
Yeah. I'm glad we're living now.
I am too. This is, I've always wanted to develop games. I've always enjoyed playing them. And this is the opportunity to make a genre, to define it,
yeah.
to sit around at a table like this and talk about what's going to happen next, to decide, well, what are we going to work on next? Mm-hmm. Here's a great idea. Let's make it happen mm-hmm. in the next game or in the expansion of the game we're working on right now. Mm-hmm. No better time.
Mm-hmm. Cool for you guys, too, because, you know, you've already made EverQuest, right?
I mean, yes.
You kind of have nothing to prove in a way. You know, I mean, I know you probably don't feel that way, right?
It'll be nice. It'll be very nice to have a second success. But, you know, there's. I never hope to be, let's say, I use it as an example, kind of the artist who who is now composing music for himself.
Yeah.
You know, he has become so wealthy and so successful that you can't produce him and you can't tell him to play something that's commercial. He's off on his own.
Uh-huh.
Now, his avid fans may still follow his work,
right?
But he's not commercial or mainstream anymore.
Right.
I want to stay mainstream. I want
right.
to stay talking to people like yourself who mm-hmm. who keep it real, who say, mm-hmm. Jeff, you know, is your game going to be appealing to me? Because mm-hmm. if you're not appealing to me, then you're off in left field someplace. Mm-hmm. I want to stay mm-hmm. on track, making mainstream games, mm-hmm. evolving the genre with oversight and partners and people, you know, in a large group participating collaboratively to mm-hmm. make these products. That's where success is going to come, I think, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the fun's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do wish you the best, and I hope that we're not going to have to, you know, give you a bad review or anything.
I hope that too. Thank you very much.
It must kind of suck, huh? To work on something for 5 years and then have some smart ass just sort of dismiss your game in 500 words.
You know, these things stand on their own merit. We're working to make it as fun as we possibly can, and we won't be satisfied until we want to play it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll be right there with you complaining mm-hmm. if it's not what we want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully none of us will have to complain.
I hear that.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in, Jeff.
Thank you. I
really appreciate it. Thanks. And good luck on the game, and we'll check in with you again.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Thanks.